Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. We're going to talk about a complicated, at least for me, it was a complicated study that was published in the New England Journal in 2013, volume 368, starting on page 709. It actually is a blood thinner study. It's a comparison study. Perhaps we should start with a little bit of background. Dabigatran is a blood thinner. As listeners know, traditional anticoagulants that we use in clinical use for the prevention or even the treatment of thromboembolic disease are heparin and warfarin. However, both have a narrow therapeutic window where you get adequate anticoagulation without bleeding, and both are highly variable in terms of the dose response, and that means that you have to constantly monitor their coagulation status. Another limitation of heparin is that thrombi may continue to grow during heparin therapy, or clotting may be reactivated after heparin has been discontinued. So all of these limitations have provided a strong impetus for the development of other newer anti-thrombotic agents, coupled with the fact that there's obviously a lot of money to be made, but that's a different story. Dabigatran is an orally active direct thrombin inhibitor. It does not require coagulation monitoring. It can be used for the prevention and treatment of venous thromboembolic disorders. Because its half-life is about 12 hours in adults who have normal renal function, that means that you can dose it with a pill every 12 hours or two times a day. Now, it is important to note that it's contraindicated in patients who have heart valves, and it should be used in caution with those who have impaired renal function. But what this study does is ask an important question, which is, does extended anticoagulation with dabigatran or warfarin following venous thromboembolism provide any net benefit? So if you continue on, Mark, what did they find?
Yeah, well, first of all, they have, you know, of course, you can't get into the New England Journal unless you have a good acronym. And so these were the Remedy Trial investigators doing the Resonate trial. And is it like Show Dogs or something where there's some registry and you can't pick the same name as some other trial? I mean, it seems like that's an important thing to keep track of.
But there's probably some business in Boston that does trial creation. They just come up with these names.
Acronyms are us.
Okay. Right, exactly.
So, yeah, this was complicated. So there were two randomized trials, basically, that they are reporting in this one study in the New England Journal. And they had an active control study. So they had higher risk patients. We're not told how they were designated as higher risk, just that their physician thought they might be candidates for extended anticoagulation. These folks all had DVT, PE, or both. Most had DVT, two-thirds, the rest had PE or both. And so they were felt by their physician to be at increased risk. We're not told why. And they had all had at least 3 months of anticoagulation. And then the doctor said, well, maybe we got to continue longer and continue the anticoagulation. I think they're a good candidate. And then they also had an average risk group where their treatment was compared to placebo. So the high-risk folks, they were comparing basically warfarin with dabigatran, Pradaxa, or they were comparing in the low-risk group Pradaxa versus nothing. And they followed them for 18 months and then actually went up to 36 months because they had fewer events than they expected, so they needed to wait longer in order to try and see a statistically significant difference. Okay, so let's look at the active control study first. So these were the higher-risk patients randomized to either Pradaxa or warfarin. So you had slightly more recurrent or fatal thromboembolic events in the Pradaxa group, 26 versus 18. You had fewer bleeds into a critical organ or death, 8 versus 14, and you had a similar number of deaths. So the bottom line is if you add up recurrent clots, fatal bleeds, bleeds into a critical organ, deaths, it ends up being essentially identical. So what you can say is that the Pradaxa is probably as good as warfarin for this higher risk group if you make the decision to continue. It's a lot more expensive, It's more convenient. It can't be reversed in an emergency. So the usual issues we have when we think about this new class of oral anticoagulants, you know, cost and convenience on the plus side. Convenience on the plus side, cost and lack of reversibility as a potential problem on the con side. The other study, this was the placebo-controlled study. So these were lower-risk patients, and they were put on either Pradaxa or not. They had, not surprisingly, fewer episodes of VTE, 0.4 versus 5.6%, so a number needed to treat of about 19. But they also had quite a few more major or clinically relevant bleeds, over 5% versus 1.8%. If you combine all bad things, if you combine the bleeds and the clots as a bad thing, you get essentially the same for the two groups, 39 in the Pradaxa group versus 43 in the placebo group. This was not a significant difference. So the authors don't report all deaths in the placebo-controlled study. They kind of they bury the fatal VT episodes in the composite outcome. You know, overall, when you look at the bottom line here, the authors of the trial kind of spin this as being, you know, more favorable for Pradaxa for dabigatran than I think it is. There was no benefit over warfarin in the high-risk patients, so similar outcomes, and there was. You know, I think it was a wash in terms of bleeds versus clots in the lower or average risk group. And in that group, remember, there had been a couple of studies, the WARFASA trial and the ASPIRE trial, two more acronyms, where they looked at aspirin versus placebo long-term and saw a significant reduction in clots without any increase in bleeds. And obviously, aspirin is convenient. It's very cheap. So you get some of that potential long-term benefit in these average-risk patients with the aspirin. For the high-risk patients, you know, that's where we have to, you know, make a decision. You know, is that worth doing long-term? It's quite a high cost. It may be worth it if we can, you know, have a net benefit for the high-risk patients.
Mark, why is it? This is perhaps a little bit off the topic, but why is it that
That's never stopped us before.
Why is it at a place like the New England Journal of Medicine that they allow the authors to spin things, hide things, and report things in other than a direct, upfront, transparent manner? I mean, are we ever going to get away from that sort of behavior?
You know, this was not a blatant, I would say this was not blatant spin. In fact, I had a fairly upset hematologist contact me that I was maligning these researchers and so on and so forth by using the word spin in my review. And, you know, in my written review, I still think, you know, spin is something that we all do. Even people who do research that isn't funded by a drug company like my studies, you know, it's a human tendency to try and make your work look as impactful and important as possible. And we're all sort of wired to look for differences and not just equivalents. And so, you know, I understand that. It's not always a financial motivation, but, you know, and this was a very complex study. There were lots and lots of outcomes. And, you know, it was not a terrible thing, but I do think it's important to always have someone else who isn't related to the study like us looking at these and saying, you know, it's maybe not all it's cracked up to be. And you know, and the last comment is, you know, there is a motivation. The New England Journal editors want to be the top journal in the world, and you become the top journal by having, you know, the hottest, biggest randomized trials that everyone's reading and driving traffic to your site. And, you know, they're not financially gaining from this, but there's a certain pride. If I'm the editor of the New England Journal, I'm going to want to, you know, make sure I have the, you know, they're competing for studies, basically, with JAMA and Annals. And so they want to, you know, there's also that motivation.
Yeah. I have to say that I doubt this is a study that got a huge readership. It was a very complicated study to read. I didn't note, was it an industry-funded study?
Yes, it was. It was.
Anyways, well, thanks, Mark. It was a good review of a very difficult topic, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right.
Okay,
see you
thanks.
Then.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.